traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey everyone, Steve Wolf here for Flying Turns. And with me, of course, is the founder of the International Equine Network, Scott Miller. Scott, are you dry?
Oh, well, it's getting ready to rain here, Steve. We need to rain a little bit. kind of dusty, you know, so it's going to help us a little bit to get our tracks right. All in shape. That's going to help.
And by this time of the day, everyone should be off the track.
Well, they are. Pretty much they are. You know, we just need to get some water on the track, you know, for conditioning for tomorrow and everything. What have you got for us, Steve?
There's a lot of stuff going on, but I think the most important one is everyone's talking about, well, this is what we're going to do when we reopen. And the question is whether horse racing tracks can reopen. And yesterday, Governor Cuomo sort of dropped a bombshell and said he sincerely doubts there'll be any racing at Saratoga this summer, which upset quite a few people. And now insiders say that they will race at Saratoga, but it'll be fanless to begin with. Whether or not they can pull that off, I don't know. But I can tell you this much. In Canada, Standardbred Canada, which pretty much runs everything for the sport, for harness racing up there, they have put out a standardbred horse racing blueprint, which people can go to standardbredcanada.com or pretty much any of the harness racing. They can go to Harness Link or USTA or Harness Racing Update or even a daily racing form, and they can see this special report about how they plan on returning racing in Canada. It's a 30-page blueprint, but it literally covers everything from returning to racing, public relations, stakeholder engagements, what the government's plans are involved. It's pretty intense, and is worth your time to, you know, look it up and read it.
Oh yeah, and, well, you know, in Kentucky, Steve, you say it, hitting on that in Kentucky. I read this morning in the Blood Horse what they're going to have to do. And let me tell you, it's quite a procedure to get into the track. They're limited to the trainer, the groom, the exercise rider, you know, the hot walker. They got to take the test, you know, the temperature test. They get a band on their hand. They can't go from barn to barn. Once they leave the track, they can't come back. You know, and it's going to be very difficult. But the racing end of it, have you got any ideas how they're going to do that?
Well, not really. I mean, everyone is that's why the blueprint, which I was getting into reading for Canada, is going to be good because they have everything lined out. But in reality, if and when testing is a lot easier to get done, I would think that every driver, trainer, groom that's, you know, going to be racing at a track meet either has to show that they've been tested for and don't, you know, or have the antibodies in them for corona. And I think that it's going to take time and a lot of effort, but it's the safest way to go. I mean, I just can't understand, you know, doing it any differently. You have to do every test, temperature test, questions, blood test if necessary, just to make sure everyone's safe for racing.
Well, how are they going to do the paddocks for the harness? You know, how are they going to get, let's say, 10 horses in a paddock or two races in a paddock at a time? Will they be able to do that at most tracks?
Well, most racetracks can hold over 100 horses in their race paddock. That can be a full 10 races, 10 horses per race. So they're going to cut it down to 3 races allowed at any one time in the paddock. And then each stall is going to be, there'll be a gap between each stall. I mean, there's going to be some interaction, but it's going to be kept to a minimum. It's an inconvenience, perhaps, to people, you know, when they're shipping in or have to do LASIX and everything like that. But they're going to have a full, they're going to have, just like Standard Canada, each state's going to come up with their own blueprints of how to get this done and keep it safe. And that's going to take a little bit of time. And I'm sure as they roll along or prepare to open, they're going to have qualifiers, just as we've been doing at Sunshine Meadows and at Olympia of Palm Beach and up north at Spring Garden Ranch. They're going to have qualifiers, you know, to get these horses ready to race. And as they do the qualifiers, they're going to get all the testing information for everyone that's coming in. It's just, you know, but guess what? If you're a horseman and you've been able to ride this whole virus out to this point and you still have your stable together, you're going to do whatever it takes to be able to get on the racetrack and go. Now, Australia and New Zealand, they have their plans set. And New Zealand is getting ready to start racing. They haven't opened up the country yet to anyone, but within their country, they're going to start fanless racing. In fact, they just announced that because of the halt of racing, that the minimum purse of any racetrack is going to be $7,000.
Well, yeah, that was one of the things I was going to ask you. You know, how is the purse structure going to be affected by, you know, fanless racing, with nobody there?
That all depends on the arrangement that each individual racetrack has, you know, with their, you know, how can I put this proper? There's money that's due the purses. If they're a racino, if they're a racetrack with a casino, and they're going to be able to start, you know, racing, well, if they have, you know, a really good arrangement with the casino, they're going to be able to offer decent purses, because they haven't had any racing, and the purses have been sitting there for 30 days worth or whatever, not being used. So hopefully they'll be able to inject that and have better purses. But that's going to depend on each state's track or each individual track. And if they have an arrangement with a casino or in New Jersey, the Meadowlands with the race book, you know, that's not going to open yet, but you know, the horseman's, what they call the purse account, if that's been just sitting there collecting interest, hopefully they're going to do the same thing they've done in New Zealand and set up, you know, a higher minimum range to start with, and horsemen can start earning money back for their owners and themselves that they've been missing out on for a couple months now.
Now what about ship-ins, Steve? Are they going to be allowing, you know, horses to ship in, especially up like in the Northeast, New Jersey, New York, you know, Pennsylvania?
Well, they have to at a lot of tracks because they don't have adequate, shipping in, not in state. They don't have adequate stall space. Right. Example in New Jersey, Freehold, Meadowlands, they don't have stalls. Everybody has to ship in. And up in New York State, a lot of places have their own little training tracks and stuff, and they want to ship in there. Some place like Hoosier Park that hadn't opened up yet, well, I'm not sure. They're going to have to make up their decision if, you know, only the people that go in the barn area. A lot of barn areas are not as big as they were 15 or 20 years ago. That has change drastically due to the valuable acreage that's around. So there's, you know, not everybody has enough stalls, you know, at the track to run a race meet. So they're going to have to come up with special conditions for shipping in horses. And that's going to be not a problem, but it's going to be a situation for the truck drivers, for the people shipping the horses and stuff. They're all going to have to get tested.
Well, you know that you're saying, you know, about the testing and all. I was reading in one of the articles this morning that when they go in, they're going to have to fill out, you know, a form, and it's creating a paper trail. where they've been, where they live, who they're, you know, who they're associated with, you know, that type of thing, when they come in, because they want to know, you know, if something does happen, they can start, you know, paper trailing that back to maybe the source of where they got it at.
Exactly. And there's going to be a lot more.
Yeah, that's going to be time consuming, you know, because, you know, horsemen, when you're there at 4:30 in the morning, you know, you literally could spend a half hour getting tested and filling out forms before you can get to work.
Nope, you're 100% right. In fact, no, go ahead.
Yeah, well, what I was going to ask you is, how are they going to staff that? Are, you know, do you think the tracks are going to have enough staff there to, you know, handle all this? Because I'm sure they're going to have to do more than one person at a time.
Oh, no, absolutely, and they're going to have more people. And I know that the horsemen's associations, you know, they work with the racetracks, and if need be, they help bring in personnel, especially if they have people that know, you know, who these horse people are, so that sometimes seeing a friendly face to do all the questioning and take all the information is even better than an outsider. But they're going to have to, everyone's going to have to step up, and there's going to have to be changes made. I think everyone is aware of that, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get racing back. The worst thing in the world now is all these horses, I mean, they're geared up. They were ready to race a month ago, 2 months ago, and now they've all been, you know, just sitting in their stalls going out jogging every day. So they're going to, everybody's going to do whatever they can, whatever tests, whatever forms they have to fill. It's going to get done to keep the industry going and get it back again.
How many days a week are they going to be racing, Steve? Are they going to be racing a normal schedule or a limited schedule of race dates?
Well, I think some of the tracks would probably add race dates. If they were only going to race, you know, 3 days a week, they may go a four, an occasional five, to try and make things up. It's just tough if they're in a situation where they normally would race 5 days a week. They don't, you know, it's going to be tough to fill so many cards. So it depends on what the track feels, you know, that they can get the number of enough horses to add extra racing. You know, extra racing means extra horses. I know in Quebec at the Hippodrome 3R, they race Friday nights and Saturdays. And there are times when horses will double entry. In other words, they'll race Friday night, and then they'll come back and race on Sunday afternoon. And just to be able to get, but they train their horses that way. They don't have to train them as much. If they're racing, you know, a couple times a week, it's a little harder on the horses. But when you have a limited season, you know, you got to have these horses ready to go every week, at least, in order to make some money and get it back in your, because everybody is especially, I can't fathom the money being spent, you know, with these big stables of 80 horses, you know, keeping the grooms on, taking care of them, whether you're working them or just jogging them. I mean, the loss of income has been outlandish. And a lot of stake races, like we've talked about, in fact, the first leg or the first major trotting event for the Hamiltonian is the Dexter Cup, and that's been canceled. And the great four-year-old race up in Quebec, the Prix de Tay 200,000, that's been canceled. And other stakes are going to get canceled as we keep, you know, if we keep the racetracks closed.
Well, like going on. You know, to the Hamiltonian, you know, the series of races that helped you get there. Are they going to make those races up, or you know?
No. The Dexter Cup is postponed, canceled. They're not going to have it this year. They're not going to try and make it up, because usually in May, Freehold Raceway, which hosts that race, they get ready to close. They don't race in the summers. Monmouth Park is open. So, you know, they don't pick up racing until after the Hamiltonian in August. And, of course, the Hamiltonian is still set, you know, for the first Saturday in August. And, you know, we're hopeful that all the horses will be able to start racing soon because I'm sure they're ready to go. But you know what? I got to give a little credit to the USTA and to the Harness Racing Fan Zone. And there's other organizations, too, for coming up with these fantasy races where they in fact, the greatest harness horse ever challenge for 2020 is down to the final four. And this is a great challenge. If you want to go and watch it, you can even vote for your favorites on, you have to go to ustrotting.com. But the final four is coming up. And believe it or not, Scott, three of the four finalists are trotters.
Oh, man. That's going to cause a lot of arguments, isn't it?
Well, it is, but they have a system. They have a point system that they use. And I haven't seen as many complaints as people said, oh, this one would win with this one would win. But the number one choice in the East Coast, Northern bracket is the number one seed, Muscle Hill, probably one of the greatest trotters ever to race. But in the number 15 seed in the lower Southern district, another trotter by the name of Mac Lobel. And he was 3-4. He was an unbelievable, super fast trotter, but Muscle Hill went totally undefeated. He was great. But on the west side, in the northern west area, the third choice, Moneymaker, probably the greatest trotting mare ever. And then in the number 15 seed, which I can't believe, but he's made it to the final four, is Niatros.
Oh, that's a nice horse.
Yeah, last week Niatros beat Wiglet Jiglet. Last week Moneymaker beat Some Beach Somewhere, which that's a tough one. And the other side, it was Muscle Hill against Chardonnay, and Muscle Hill beat Chardonnay. And then it was Nihilator against Mac Lobel, and Mac Lobel won. So we got a couple major long shots there, but I still think that Muscle Hill is the best. I mean, go ahead.
And all these great horses and everything, how's that going to affect the Horse of the Year for this coming year?
If we can start racing in May, then most of the major stakes are still going to be there. And we're going to have Horses of the Year. That's all there is. It might be a shorter season. I mean, there hasn't been any cancellation of racing or anything like this coronavirus has done since World War II.
Now, do you think that will take away from, like, say, the Horse of the Year for 2020 in comparison to, you know, horses of the past? You think that would diminish their
title? No, I don't think. It all depends on when racing starts. If racing starts at the end of May, enough stake races will be there to declare or vote on a Horse of the Year. Now, for instance, Chardonnay the last 2 years, has raced almost 10 of the 11 months of the year it raced. I mean, and this year they were going to give it an abbreviated, much shorter season. Instead of, 25 starts, I think it was only going to be maybe 15. And yeah, she's missed some of them already, but she'll still be able to go at it, and she'll have a great shot at repeating as Horse of the Year. But you don't know about the three-year-olds. You don't know if there's like a four-year-old just coming of age that's going to return to the races, Century Pharaoh or the Sweet Lou colt. I think it's Dynamic Lou. I mean, he was a great 2-year-old. These horses could come back and still have a sensational season. I mean, just on the trotting side, you're still going to have the Triple Crown and then the Breeders' Crown. So any horse, any 3-year-old that can excel and do well in the Hamiltonian or the Kentucky Futurity, the Yonkers Trot, they could end up emerging as a champion because they've won all the major stake races.
Well, you know, the thing that I was thinking about earlier today as I was riding around here at Sunshine Meadows and seeing all the horses, and, you know, it just made me wonder how the value of those horses are holding. You know, we have Maverick out here that they spent $1 million for. And, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, is he worth $1 million right now? You know, that's one of the things that I was thinking about, because the sales are down, racing's gone. You know, how can you place a value on that horse right now?
Well, other than for future stallion, remember, he's a full brother to the $1 million winning Trotter of the Year, Green Shoe. This
right.
past season. So his breeding is impeccable. I've seen the horse up close, was able to pet him and say hello and look at him. I've watched him on the racetrack. He's totally awesome. I mean, I would gather to say that if he was pushed right now, he probably could trot in 158. I mean, that's how good. I mean, rumor has it they had him under wraps in 207 at your place last Saturday. So he's absolutely still worth the money, because hopefully he's going to get a bunch of races at age 2 and then come back next year when things are normal, not normal, but are better off in the world for a full season as a 3-year-old. So his value... I mean, I think right now the $1 million paid for him Bradley Grant's not going to lose a dime. He could put him to stud right now and make that $1 million back.
Exactly.
I think, they can do that.
Well, you're talking about, you know, stud duties and so forth. That's one of the things that the thoroughbred industry is looking at now, is they're trying to evaluate how bad this has damaged the breeding operations, you know, that type of thing. You know, it's awful hard to ask an owner to go to the breeding shed, you know, and spend $250,000 for a stud when you don't know what's going to happen, you know, down the road. And, you know, it's just going to be awful tough. And that's what I was thinking today, is how do you place a value on something that is really, you know, potential like a Maverick, but yet there's no value because you're not racing. And he can improve that value by, you know, racing, you know, have the opportunity to do that. But yet again, if he doesn't run well, you know, then that can diminish the value of him. So, you know, that's kind of a hard position to be in.
Well, I think what has to happen is everything has been status quo, and until we know when we can race again, we'll be able to know how much we can salvage and make the shortened season at least, you know, somewhat decent. I mean, as long as there's a future, then people are just going to have to hold and wait and see. And you know what? If you end up having, whether you have a sale in December instead of November, I can't answer that, because I know horses have to get broken and trained and everything else. But I think everyone realizes, hey, we've lost, let's not say 2.5 months, we've lost 6 months, and figure it on from that and go forward.
Yeah, well, you know, like we were talking the other day about the wagering. You know, they're having record-breaking days at the thoroughbred tracks now that, you know, that are racing, you know, without fans.
And, right.
You know, you think that that'll happen with the harness horses?
Well, it should have at Pompano. I mean, they were so quick to end the race meet with the coronavirus while Tampa Bay and Gulfstream are flourishing. Just imagine if Pompano Park, El Dorado Casino, said, you know what, we should race too. And that way, you know, I can't answer. Don't understand. Because they don't want to have a lost leader in revenue. And they didn't realize when they made the decision to end the meet and end the race meet, because of course the state isn't going to, you know, fine them or anything for not racing 126 days because of the virus. They're going to get a bye on that. But that being said, if they had opened up and kept the meet going, I think they would be doing million-dollar nights. I mean, just a million, whereas other tracks are doing, you know, 3, 4, 5 million. I think if Pompano was the only harness track in North America, and you can bet on it online, you know, Twin Spires or Ida Bet or TVG, how many millions could be bet on it? It was probably the worst mistake they could imagine they made. Very bad.
Well, you know, I was hoping that I could run into Eric Terry. I wanted to find out how OnGate was doing with their sales. You know, if it's slacked off or if they're selling horses, because, you know, a lot of times when you get in a situation, you know, especially in the horse business, and something goes wrong, you know, like this virus or, you know, bad economy, what have you, a lot of people, you know, they bail out. You know, they start selling horses right and left. And I remember the Hunt brothers back some years ago had over 200 and some odd mares, and the economy was getting ready to tank. It was in bad shape. And the oldest Hunt brother, he said, send them to the sales. You know, and all of a sudden, you know, they've got a special, you know, a page added to the sales catalog. The Hunts are selling their mares, and then everybody
right.
else is selling
supplement.
Their mares. And, you know, and you can get mares for nothing, you know. Yeah. And so I didn't know if, you know, that might be a trend here, you know, for the standard bred. Some of the people might not be able to, you know, last 6 months without any, you know, racing or anything.
Well, I understand. And, that's a hard question. Eric would probably answer it better if I know him. And guess what? I know it's his birthday tomorrow too.
Uh-oh.
So anyone out there, he's not on Facebook or anything, but I'm sure we'll send an early birthday greeting to Eric Cherry. But I'm sure everything is status quo with OnGate. That they're handling, you know, they're still selling horses. People are buying horses. People are optimistic. And you know what? If you got a stable of 10 race horses ready to go, and you can, you know, put them on a truck and ship them to the first track that opens, that's where I'd be.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's what a lot of people here at Sunshine Meadows are trying to figure out. When do I go, you know, and you know, the what ifs. You know, what if we get to, you know, to New York and the outbreak is, you know, resurfaces, you know, or something happens and you get locked in, you know?
Well, you can't think that way. You're going to be that rabbit, you know, the if.
Yeah.
If only counts in hand grenades, I think it is. Not even horseshoes.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, we're looking at here in the business, and it's kind of interesting how the show horse business is kind of setting a precedent for what could be for, you know, the standard breds and the thoroughbreds. They're having virtual horse shows. And basically what they do is you send in a video of your horse at a previous horse show. And, you know, then they evaluate them through a judging system like they would at a regular horse show, and then they decide who the winners are. And now, you know, with the, like the harness, you know, having their, you know, their race, virtual racing, the thoroughbreds have it now, and they're going to have the virtual derby coming up Saturday on NBC. And they've taken all the, they've taken 18 derby winners, and they're putting them into a gate, and they're gonna race, you know, to see what happens, you know, and
Exactly what the USTA is doing in these, and
exactly.
It's a fantasy race based on a point system on their performances. I've seen that. In fact, I voted. Of course, I had to vote for Secretariat. I mean, there's some prizes going on Facebook if you can pick the winner. But if you look at the statistics, the same is happening in harness racing. I mean, I don't want to guarantee it, but I'm pretty sure that Muscle Hill, statistic-wise, is going to crush everybody, and he's going to win it.
Right. Well, you know, the whole thing is show you how some good could come out of some bad. This is a whole new entity for the horse industry as a whole. You can be very creative. You can create your own horse shows. You can create your own horse racing. You know that type of thing. And I know that Churchill has on their website for Saturday, it's a derby day, a virtual derby day. And
right.
You go in and they're telling you how to make all the food, the drinks, you know, how to party, you know, how to do the whole nine yards. And they're working with NBC, and it's going to be a program nationally on NBC from 3 to 6 p.m., you know, on Saturday. And it's really, I started looking at the website, and it's kind of wild, you know, to see all this virtual things that are going on. You know, and I think that could be a good revenue, you know, for a lot of organizations in the horse industry.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch and see and how it goes. And you know what? not to change the subject, but I do want to make sure that we talk about at least the sport of harness racing. I don't know how the other disciplines are doing, but the Harness Horse Youth Foundation has come up with a great idea, and anyone, especially if you have young children or grandchildren, that you want to ease them into the sport and teach them something. If you go to the initials HHYF, Harness Horse Youth Foundation, but go to hhyf.org and look up their harness racing activity box. These boxes contain games and to-do projects, all related to horses and harness racing. And the activities have each been carefully intertwined with the usual subjects of art, math, science, language art. It's got history, social science, even some vocabulary words. But they've produced boxes. These are for audiences of, let's say, from, you know, 10 to 13-year-old. Even some older teens might find the materials interesting. But in May, they've got, the basic Harness Racing 101. And for $20, you get this whole box of things that you can do with the kids at home or the grandkids. Then the next box, that's for May. Then June, they have before you get to the races, that activities, you know, about young horses. It really teaches you everything about getting horses. Then in July, they're going to have at the races, which this activity box is actual racing, a standardbred, learned what happens on race day, a sneak preview of what it's like to be in the winner's circle. You'll even receive your own lucky horseshoe. And then in August, the box of goodies for the kids, it's all related. This box explores the variety of careers and related businesses that are involved in the harness racing world. And, you know,
It's a great way to combine a love of horses and perhaps a future job for a young person. But if you've got teenage kids, go to hhyf.org. You can buy all four of these activity boxes for $90, and you're going to have all these great harness racing things you can do with your kids or grandkids, because I'm sure everyone's getting tired of playing Scrabble Monopoly in life.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you said about to even get a horseshoe. I was asked one day what the most valuable part of a horse was. Was it his mind, his heart? And I said, the horseshoe. And they said, the horseshoe? Why the horseshoe? Well, when I was working at Wind Star Farm, we were at Churchill, and they had a backside tour that they give. And tourists come in and pay, you know, a few dollars, and they get a tour of the barns and, you know, see where the Derby horses lived and so forth. And so what I would do, I would hand people, when they came in for the tour, I'd give them a horseshoe, you know, to have. And everybody really appreciated that, you know, and it was good for the business, you know, trying to get people more interested into it. So a few years later, I get a call from the office at Churchill, and they said that I can't hand out horseshoes anymore. And long story short, they told me it was because they're afraid somebody would, you know, cut themselves, you know, or what have you, and sue them. And they also had a gentleman there from Canada, and he says, you're the guy that I'm looking for. And I thought maybe, you know, something had happened, you know, to somebody, because I'd given him a horseshoe a few years earlier. Well, he says, yep. He says, I take my family to Disney World on vacation. He said, spend a lot of money. He says, I come on the way back home. He said, we stop at Churchill. We take the horse tour. He said, you give my kids the horseshoe. He said, we get back home in Canada. And he said, all those kids are talking about is the man that gave him the horseshoe. Where could they go back and get another one? You know, and I think, like you're talking about, educational material and things of that nature is what we need for the business. You know, is to drive that person into, you know, maybe wanting to get a career in the horse business. You know, you don't have to know anything about horses to, you know, to get those kind of projects going.
Oh, no, they're great. And I can remember exactly, you know, given the Harness Horse Youth Foundation, I used to run camps up in New Jersey, and we would spend anywhere from 40 minutes to over an hour in the blacksmith shop, because we arranged with the blacksmith. He had a box of shoes for the kids. Everybody got one. They had to wiggle out and try and get the nails out, and then they were able to bring the shoe to the blacksmith once they had it somewhat cleaned, and then he showed them and allowed them to smooth everything off.
Wow.
and clean it right up on his brushes and his grinder. But he also showed them how they made shoes and stuff, and you're 100% right. That was probably one of other than getting to sit in a jog cart and actually jog a horse, that was probably one of the most interesting things. I mean, the kids love to brush horses and stuff, but to watch them make and put on a horseshoe, and then you get one for yourself, it's a great thing. And that reminds me, Scott, you still owe my mother some horseshoes. You know,
that's
she
right.
wants them. She cleans them up for gifts. So in your travels, you got to remember to take a look.
Thoroughbred shoes or harness shoes?
Ah,
I don't want to get in trouble with her by giving her a thoroughbred shoe.
No, yeah, you better make it harness shoes.
Yeah, there you go.
I think anything is going to be, you know, acceptable.
We'll get her fixed up. You know, talking about these programs and everything, eventually we're going to get Ben Walden Jr. on the show. He's the COO of the St. Lucia Turf Club in St. Lucia. And I was reading an article that the government at St. Lucia had put out, and they literally have created, you know, the thoroughbred industry to race there. And one of the unique things that they did, and one of the first things that they did, is they developed a program to teach St. Lucians how to groom, walk horses, ride horses, feed them, distribute seed, hay, you know, that type of thing. And it created jobs, you know, for them. And I think that in the horse industry, if we were to educate people and give them opportunities to get on the backside, to go to a farm, to see, you know, I had people that came and look at, my horse vans. They wanted to see how a horse, you know, rode down the road. So whenever we were at a, you know, like at the Derby or Preakness or Belmont or Saratoga, we'd just, you know, open the door and let them walk through and see what it was like. And, you know, lo and behold, 5 years later from the day that we started that, letting people do that, there was a guy applying for a job. You know, he had a CDL and he wanted to learn how to drive, you know, trucks and haul horses. And, that's the things that we need to do, you know, for the business is get out and create those jobs and educate people.
Yes, we do. We need to be ready to educate just as racing begins and tell everybody, hey, look, racing's back. You can watch it here. You can view it here. But the trouble is, it's if it's going to be fanless racing, then you got to make a big presence on TV.
Yeah. Do you realize how many bookies were created from this virus? A lot of people out there taking bets. You know.
I'm just wondering if all the bookies are out of work, or are they allowed to apply for unemployment relief or financial loans?
Yeah, how are they going to do that? Well, everything's electronic now. You know, like at twinspires.com, you know, everything's just electronic. You know, you make the wagers through them, and, you know, there's no.
Well, I wasn't even. The wagers on what, though? That's the question.
Well, you know, we got 5 thoroughbred tracks running. Now that Will Rogers Downs said it's the best year they ever had.
I know that. I've looked at their handle in the millions and everything, and that's why it just I can't fathom why Pompano didn't, you know, make an extra effort, because who knows how much they would have had to have handled at least 500,000 a day, a night on their program, being the only track in North America. They would. The money it would become flying in, but alas, that's not going to happen. But the thoroughbreds are Gulfstream and Tampa Bay are having a hell of a season.
Right, and you know they just extended the dates for Tampa, and
not extended. Yeah, they gave them 30 another month. I don't know how many days a week are going right now, but they got the race for another month, which that could be extended again. I mean. And you watch, and if they're not having any shortage, I don't think they're having any shortage of fields, especially at Gulfstream.
No, they're not. You know, Todd Pletcher still has all his horses up here. We're pretty much all of them up here at Palm Beach Downs. And, it's only show going right now until, you know, the other states open up. He does have horses going over to Hot Springs, to Oaklawn Park for the Arkansas Derby. And show you how the fields are there. They have 2 divisions now for the Arkansas Derby. And Todd's got one.
Right, I saw that, which was a good idea. There was a lot of debate on whether or not, you know, to allow just the 16 money winners or whomever in the race.
Right.
But they had enough entered. Why not split it and go? I mean, they do that in harness racing all the time.
Right.
And if anything, let's say you're Ron Burke and you've got 4 horses ready to go, you're allowed to have 2 in each division.
Right.
You know, racing for a purse as opposed to just getting 2 in one race for a bigger purse.
Well, you know, they ended up with 22 horses for the Arkansas Derby this weekend.
Right.
Comes on NBC at 6:00. It was amazing how the draws came out. Baffert and Todd Pletcher got horses in both divisions. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how this all comes out. A lot of these horses that are in there, would have been at New Orleans or, you know, New York, or, you know, they would have been scattered everywhere. But fortunately, with Oakland Racing, they all came there. So it's going to be good, you know, potentially for the Derby. We know the Derby's not going to run anytime this, you know, this summer until the fall. So we should have quite a few good horses here coming up for the Derby in September, you know, that type of thing. But I tell you, that Governor Morris had a good workout at Palm Beach Downs on Saturday. They got what they wanted out of him. And then
right.
Baffert said, Bob Baffert said something that just kind of gave me a chill. They asked him about, you know, how do you, you want to win the Derby again, and it's going to be in September. He says, how do you do that? You know, how do you keep your horse at that level? And he said, you know, he said, a good trainer can keep his horse pointed in the right direction and not have to worry about it. And
right.
I said, this guy won all the races that he's won, and he's sitting chilly on these horses. So we're going to see Saturday just how much of an edge, you know, he took.
So the horse that won the Tampa race is now in the Arkansas Derby?
Yeah, they got all of them over there. He's a long shot, mm-hmm. you know, over there. And it's, I tell you what, the Arkansas Derby is up for grabs. You know, you're gonna see.
Oh, it'll be a great race.
Yeah, no telling who you'll see, you know, come out of there. And I was just looking at the trainers. You know, you got Baffert, Mike Baker, Pletcher in there. Asmussen's got a couple in there. You know, Brad Cox, you know, he's got a couple, you know, running that day. And you know, it just goes to show you, if they could open up racing, like, say, at Pompano, the standard bred tracks, more thoroughbred tracks, you know. In fact, they're getting ready to start sending horses to Churchill next week. And, you know, soon they'll have Hamlet's Racing there. And that's one good way to really start, you know, revitalize the horse industry by letting them race like that. So if they're doing what they're doing at Tampa and Gulfstream, you can imagine what's going to happen when they open up Churchill.
Oh, no. Well, it'll take money away from the other places, that's for sure. But and then the harness game has to they have to get their tracks open. I just, you know, just bothers me so much that Pompano was obviously too quick to cancel, because they were in a perfect spot to keep racing. And I'm sure that a lot of the horses at Sunshine Meadows, Spring Garden, Olympia, Palm Beach, I mean, they'd all come down and race.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you.
They would have had a heck of a meet.
You think that this is going to affect Pompano for racing next year? Do you think is it going to?
Although, I mean, they're going to race, absolutely. It's just the fact that they're missing out on a golden opportunity, because they should never have closed. I mean, they closed for, you know, right at the height of everything. All the tracks closed. But they should have been prepared to go fanless and you know, make the precautions and stuff with the paddock and the barn area and shipping horses and stuff, just as they're doing at Gulfstream and Tampa Bay. And they, even if they raced just three nights a week, they would have done super. Any track, the first harness track that opens, especially with night racing, because these other tracks are all day race, the thoroughbreds
right.
are all day racing,
right.
to be the first track to be racing at night, you know, they're going to reap major benefits. And usually in a situation like this, the track I would look at to open first would be Northfield Park.
Yeah.
Because they have a huge, they if their purses are right, they can go 6 days a week, you know, and they'll have 600 horses to race.
Right. Well, you know, if Pompano would have stayed open, you know, and you know, kind of like Gulfstream and Tampa have done, they probably could got extended dates, you know, to race, you know,
absolutely.
More in the summer.
Anyone? Absolutely, Pompano. They would have probably said, no problem, go ahead and race, just follow the same conditions and all. There was no excuse for them to close.
Right, because see, they still have the horsemen are there, you know, but
right.
they've got nowhere to race. And if they would have opened up, you know, to live racing, those guys would be making income and you know, provide for their owners and their help, and it would have been bringing money into Pompano because they would have been.
Oh no, it all would have been positive if they were allowed to, but we can't. We can't talk about the ifs of the world because they made their decision and that's the end of it.
Right.
Just have to go forward and hope that other states are going to allow fanless racing in the first stages of reopening. And I think if enough pressure is put on, a track like Saratoga will be able to race, you know, fanless, and that's going to open the door for the other track, the harness track, Saratoga, to open up.
Exactly.
So you'd have harness and thoroughbred racing going, and mm-hmm. and they could theoretically be one of the first ones. I mean, I don't understand, or a Hoosier Park, because primarily not a lot, you know, people might ship from the Meadows and stuff. There's another track that could, you know, theoretically. But we have to wait and see what the government say. It's not an easy thing to do, but if given the opportunity, I would, from a capitalistic financial point of view, I would want to be the first track to open and race at night and get all that simulcasting.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, and like everybody will jump on board there. Now,
and you're going to have hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are going to be back in work, not on unemployment, and you know, creating taxable income for the government and local businesses and everything. I mean, it's like a major positive thing to allow them to go with fanless racing. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been talking to a lot of my friends that are in the related businesses, you know, for the horse industry. And, you know, the shippers they're shipping some horses, you know, little by little, not like they normally would be at this time of year because, you know, it's what they call the move when everybody starts moving back out, you know, out of Florida and California and, you know,
right.
back to Chicago and Kentucky and New York. And the feed dealers, they said, you know, it hasn't hurt them at all because they have to eat. You know, it hasn't changed their schedule. And then I got to thinking just about how lucky I am to be, you know, here at Sunshine Meadows because, you know, it's inconvenienced me some, you know, here, worried about, you know, the virus and all like that. But my job has gone on as normal. You know, I'm still getting yelled at. I'm still getting in trouble, and it didn't waver at all. You know, so which is good for me. And I kind of related that to all the horse industry, and you know, the veterinarians are still coming. The hay people, the feed people are still coming. You know, and so you know, I'm pretty fortunate. You know, in that respect, and I think that once this opens up. And I agree with you. The first tracks that go to, you know, fanless racing, you know, I mean, like Churchill, they're just chomping at the bit, you know, to get
right.
open and start racing again. Because the quality of the horses now has not changed since going to Churchill. You're still going to have the quality horses. You're still going to have the races like you would if you had fans there. You're just not going to, you know, have an audience, you know, to watch it. So from a television standpoint, that's going to be pretty good, I think.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be something fresh. And if they promote it ahead of time, it'll be even better.
Oh, I had a guy tell me the other day, he's a good businessman. He told me, he said, boy, you better get that video going over there at International Equine Network. And I said, do you think I could grow a full head of hair, lose 50 pounds? Get myself all fixed up in 5 days. I said, that ain't going to happen, you know. But I think video, you know, the YouTube, the Facebook, you know, the lower tiers on like Sinclair Broadcasting, ABC, NBC, you know, type of thing. I think that's what's
right.
going to happen. You know, the television end of the business is just going to explode.
I think so. It's just a matter of time and working it out with the state and federal government, because there's just going to be rigid testing all over. And I'm sure they have their plans and they're abiding by everybody. And once they see that on a major television broadcast, I'm sure for the Arkansas Derby, they're definitely going to have interviews and showing the precautions they're taking for this race.
Right.
And that's the way to get things started, you know, have an event like this and push it hard and let everybody, who knows how many people would watch it. And wager on it too.
Well, see, that's like with the virtual show that's coming on NBC on Saturday. They're very creative, you know, because not only are they going to have the Arkansas Derby live, you know, racing from Oakland, but they've got other entertainment, you know, about the mint julep, you know, for the Derby, all the food, you know, all the different things that they're doing. And they've kind of expanded and they're filling a void that, you know, instead of talking about horses, they're talking about all the things that you can do at home. And if
right.
you go to Churchill Downs' website, they have a whole package there of how to have your own derby party at home, you know. And so I think it's going to be good. My main concern is how long is this going to last, and I don't think anybody can answer that.
Yeah, that's the – if we – I have to get out my magic eight ball, that's all.
There you go.
When I'm really in doubt, these tough times the magic eight ball always comes through.
Well, ask if Baffert's going to win the race Saturday or Todd Pletcher. I think Todd's got a good shot with that Governor Morris. I like the way he worked at Palm Beach Downs, and I think he's got a shot with that horse.
Well, I have no doubt, and but that's why we race him, right?
That's right. You got that right. Well, Steve, what are we going to talk about next week on next week's show? We just got a couple minutes here. What are we going to talk about?
Well, depending on how things go, I think I'm hopefully going to have a setup, and we're going to talk with the CEO and Vice President of Racing for the Meadowlands, Vernon Downs, and Tioga Downs, okay. And we're working on having Jason Settimore as our guest.
Okay. That'll work. That
I think so, because I think by then, Jason, they might have an idea of who's actually going to start racing first, and he can talk about the plans for the three different racetracks and what's going on, because that has to be pretty intense, and they've got to be working on you know, getting things ready for when they can race, and whether it'll be fanless or not. There's got to be, what do you call it, rules, regulations, testing, you know, the whole nine yards. And I think Jason will be a great interview.
Well, I'm going to talk with Ben Walden on Monday, and we'll see if we can get him on there about horse racing in St. Lucia in the Caribbean. So we'll try to get him on next week.
That'll be very good, especially since they're on an island and sort of out of action, and what they're doing to get racing going again.
There you go. You know, Steve, I think we had a good show today.
Sure.
Our guys at BBS took good care of us today. I got to start really putting myself to the work pedal and get our videos finished up. I'll send you some more video intros for you. And we'll see what we can do. And maybe in a couple of weeks, our listeners can start looking at us instead of listening to us.
You got it. I'm ready. I'm ready. This has been a good show. Next week will be even better. Hopefully we'll have some great positive news for the people.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Good luck to you. Thanks to our guys at BBS. And we'll see you next week.